Loyalty to Rangers is what binds us. And together, we are stronger. Launching for the 2021 season, the MyJers membership program is a new way to get even closer to the club you love. It's the one place where you can access benefits like ticketing priority, club discounts, and exclusive competitions and experiences. There's even a limited edition welcome gift when you join. Visit rangers.co.uk/myjers to join today. Always Rangers, always loyal, always rewarded.
Jones delivers.
Manchester, brace yourself.
Rangers are coming!
Oh, fans just very strong. Again, I've got a battle fever on, but I fancy Rangers to win.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Battle Fever podcast. My name is Scott Gray, and we are launching our Straight From Ibrox series today. Episode 1, we have a man who has worked at the club for nearly 20 years, if I'm not mistaken. He's pretty good when there's a spiv near your bank account, and he has agreed to speak to us today, and we're delighted with that. His name is Colin Stewart. Colin, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Scott. How are you? Thank you for inviting me on to the Battle Fever podcast. Delighted to chat to you today.
No problem, Colin. Hope all is well in this time.
Yes, yeah. My biggest regret just now is not having been able to get a haircut. I'm probably 3 weeks over a haircut, you know. What you can't see is my hair pulled back just now, like a Gareth Bale man bun at the back. That's what you can't. So I won't be turning around very much. Straight on camera.
Yeah. Fantastic. Colin, we'll go back to kind of like yourself growing up and how you get involved and stuff like that. What made you fall in love with the club?
Do you know, I'm not even sure there was anything like that. It's simply because I come from a huge Rangers family, you know. I mean, everybody in my family, growing up from a very early age. I mean, my father tells me he took me to my first game when I was 3. You know, he was supposed to be babysitting for me. So like all good Rangers dads, you know, he stuck me on his shoulders and took me to a game. So, you know, from a very early age, my brother, you know, Alan and Jim, you know, and my cousins, uncles, that, you know, we're all Rangers fans, entire family are Rangers fans, you know, so it was just like most of us, I guess, it was destiny, really, to be honest with you. So there was no one occasion when I suddenly thought, oh, I'm going to support that team there. I to be honest, I don't remember when it first started because I was basically a bit far too young. It was just, you were born into it, you know.
Yeah. So. Do any of your family then still go to the games just now, yeah?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, any time, you know. My father's 81 now, and he was the person who first obviously took me along, and he still gets to as many games as he can. You know, my brother, you know, Alan and his two kids, and uncles, aunts, you know, cousins, you name it. I've probably got between 10 and 12 family in the stadium at any one time. You know, so it's a bit of a family affair with us, you know, and I'm sure I'm not alone in that, you know. So yeah, it's. It's good because if we ever get together for, you know, like family affairs, etc., we can chat about Rangers. You know, usually the men are in the kitchen, you know, and it's just Rangers. You know, so,
I'd imagine that's all our families.
Well, yeah, pretty much, isn't it? Yeah. Get the odd one or two who are maybe not Rangers, you know, but they're outvoted usually, you know. So,
what was the first kind of team that you remember that you really took in?
Well, do you know, I was lucky enough, I guess. I've watched a few treble teams, you know, the 70s treble teams with you know, Greggy and Jock Wallace, that era. But probably just before that, you know, the 72 team, I was about 10 roughly around about then. I was lucky enough to go to a few of the games, the home games at Ibrox in the 72 run. You know, I remember Torino, Sporting Lisbon, and obviously the Bayern Munich semi-final. That's a game that has stayed with me, you know, for a long, long time, you know. And I suppose my earliest memories are, good memories going on the supporters bus. You know, my father used to work, he was an engineer in Singers in Clydebank, and then latterly the Edrington Group, you know, the Whiskey Bond up in Great Western Road. And used to be a supporters bus came out of O'Kilpatrick. I don't think it runs any longer. But that's the bus we went on, you know. And I can remember the European run, especially the the Bayern Munich game, you know. You know, the bus itself was that it was an incredible experience for a 10-year-old because, you know, that bus, they all knew each other. It was my father and all his mates and from Singers, you know. So it was a happy bus. They all, you know, they'd all work together during the day. Then they go in the bus to the game, you know. And back in the day, that you know, a lot of the younger listeners won't recognise this. The buses were just bench seats. You know, it was just benches, you know. So I can remember my father sitting in against the window and I'm on his lap. And then there's a man sitting beside him and he's got a kid on his lap. Now that bus, I don't know, maybe a 50-seater, must have had 120 people on it, you know, because you look back and every seat, every bench had four people sitting on it. And there were men standing all the way up the middle aisle. There were men sitting down beside the driver on that wee bench, beside the drivers. There were people sitting there. There were people on the steps down to the door. It was just, you could get away with it back then. And of course, everybody had alcohol. You know, all the men were bringing on whiskey and beer. And as a 10-year-old, you know, taking all of that in before you even get to the stadium was just magical, you know. And I remember that game well for that reason. The bus was just like incredibly good fun, you know. So those are probably the best memories. And I guess that's the team, you know, the 72 team, were the first team that I really kind of became aware of, if you like, you know. And I always, I'm lucky enough, I'm also a director of the Rangers Former Players Charity. We can talk about that maybe later. And I get to talk to a lot of the guys who I watched, like, you know, grow up, Greggy and all the rest. But also the wee Willie Henderson, and I always kid wee Willie on that I'm far too young to have seen him, you know, and which is kind of true, you know. And I can sort of remember Willie, you know, but really, you know, really I'm too young to remember Willie, you know. But I would say the 72 team, you know, certainly the kind of 75, 76, 77, those treble teams, magical time at Rangers, you know, they really were. We just won every game we played practically, you know. It was fantastic. Big Jock Wallace at the helm, you know. Wonderful. Great, yeah. You know.
Who would you say was your outstanding then favourite player growing up?
You know, my hero was Colin Steen, because he was a centre forward who was scoring all the goals during those runs. I've never told him that, you know, and I talked to Colin. I've got his name on this phone, you know. And I've never actually said to him, you know, growing up, you were my hero sort of thing, you know. And it's funny, I've kind of got two, I guess, because Colin, because he was a centre forward and everybody wants to be, you know. But Greggy as well, John Gregg is the captain, you know. We used to have this little kind of joke on the supporters bus when John ran out the tunnel just behind you there, always to the Copeland, which is where we always stood. And John Gregg would put the ball down and he would kick it towards the goal. Now, if you got anywhere near the 18-yard box, it was going to be a good day. If he didn't, we all kind of looked at each other and thought, oh, no, it's going to, you know, it was just a daft thing, you know. And I told John about that later on, and he doesn't remember actually doing it. I said, you did it every single game. You took the ball, you dropped it, and you kind of half drop kicked it towards the Copeland goal, you know. So, but, yeah, good memories, definitely good memories. But Colin Steen, definitely growing up, it was quite funny quite recently, you know. I thought back to, you know, times watching Colin, you know, scoring those goals at the Braga game recently, that Hadji's third goal went in. Colin and I were jumping up and down hugging, you know, and I thought that's quite funny, you know. It's quite bizarre, you know. Just it is what it is, you know.
Basically, do you still get goosebumps driving to Ibrox as an employee as you did as a kid, even though you do it most days?
Yeah, I mean, the answer is yes, I do. You know, obviously, I mean, it's no secret, not everybody at Ibrox is a Rangers fan. You don't have to be. It's the same with every club. Not everybody supports that club. But I think those of us who do support the club, you know, it's difficult not to come in, because I park my car. My office is in the Broomloan house. And so I'm parking at the Broomloan gates and pretty much next to them, I guess. Yeah, obviously. Every time you swing in, you know, you look at those gates and you think, wow. Because, I I'm old enough to remember the gates. I mean, you'll know this, but the Broomloan gates and the Copeland gates are different. The Copeland gates, unfortunately, are not the originals, but the Broomloan gates are. And if you look at them, they're magical. They're fantastic. Mm-hmm. And I'm lucky enough to remember, you know, if you look at the older pictures of the 70s, 60s, etc., when you saw the gates, and behind that there were kind of little buildings, but it was toilets really. and quite an expanse, and then the staircase, etc. So every time I look at them, and I can try and visualise what it used to be like back in the kind of 70s and early 80s, I guess. But yeah, I still get goosebumps. You know, you do. It's hard not to. It's hard not to. Every time I look in, and I still drive by, and I slow down, and I actually look in. I can go in and look in at any time I want, but I still do it. I still drive by and I stop, and I have a wee peer in through the gates, and then I carry out staffed.
I think, as fans, we can relate to that, because I don't care who you are. When you're a fan driving by there, you slow down.
you do. You know, I absolutely do. I say goodnight to John Gregg every night when I drive by his statue. I do. Every single night, I say goodnight. That's crazy. I should be telling you things like this.
How hard is it for you as an employee at the club, and obviously a fan? Games where maybe results don't go our way, things have happened in recent years. You're obviously on social media, fans are contacting you. How hard is it for you to keep your emotions in check?
Yeah, that's a difficult one at times. You know, there's so many occasions I've put a tweet on. I mean, you probably know I'm reasonably active on Twitter. Mm-hmm. And I've put a tweet on, and I've maybe posted it, and whether it's been a good occasion, bad occasion, and I've deleted it like 10 seconds later. Because I thought, no, I can't do that. And I'm actually getting better at it, to be honest, and holding emotions back. But what I frequently do is, and I watch the game too, from where you're sitting just now, just above that, I kind of watch the games from there. So I've kind of got the view you've got. What I tend to do is, if things are not going to be, I go downstairs and take myself away from it, and I go into the trophy room. And I'm the only person, the game's going on outside, and I'm actually standing in the trophy room, just counting to 10. You know, because I found that's probably the best way of doing things for me now. You know, so because you do, you know, it's difficult not to get caught up. You know, because I've got it on two sides. One, if Rangers are not doing well, for example, in a game, it's bad for me as a fan, but it's bad for business as well. You know, if we lose a game, say, our phones won't ring on a Monday morning. So I've got it on two sides. I've got it as a fan, I'm not happy. But also, it's not good for business either. So it's a kind of double whammy for me. Equally, when we're doing well, it's fantastic. You know. Yeah. So
I sit in the court one. How easy is it for me to have 10 seconds in the trophy room when it's not going well?
Just come over. We'll go down and sit. I tell you, in the trophy, it can be a lonely place in there sometimes. You know, that's where I am for most. And I'll be honest about this: most Old Firm games, that's where I am for most games. You know, and I run out when I hear a roar and I know we've scored, but most of the game, that's where I can be found.
Coming to kind of nowadays, what was Ibrox like on May the 4th, 2018, leading up to the announcement that Steven Gerrard was set to be paraded as a manager?
Yeah, I mean, incredible excitement. You know, we've all known and watched Stevie over the years as a legend in the game, and he was and still is, you know. And the idea of having, you know, a world icon at the helm, you know, immediately those of us who work at the stadium are immediately thinking, well, look, this is going to be great on the pitch. It's also going to be great off the pitch to have such an icon. And I think we can already see that, you know. I mean, I'm not talking out of school. I'm guessing, and I couldn't put names to it, but I'm guessing there's one or two players who are here because of the manager, who possibly might not have been here. I don't know. I've got no facts there, but I'm guessing, you know, when Steven Gerrard phones you, you're going to pick the phone up and talk to him, you know. So having an icon like that in charge can only be good for the club, you know. And I think most of us at the club kind of saw that. But most importantly, I think most of us thought, well, you know, we need to move to the next step. Because, you know, over the last few years, and we can talk in a wee bit about those kind of dark years, as I call them, you know, steadily, for me anyway, for each manager has taken us on that bit further. And Stephen, over the last, you know, couple of years with his management team, it's been superb. You know, it really has. I mean, I'm guessing most fans don't see what some of us can see. But, you know, we can talk about that separately if you want. But it's just been incredible, the change and the difference. And, you know, those of us at the club who've seen behind the scenes are 100% behind the manager, you know, and what he's doing, what he's achieving. And just the little things behind the scenes, the changes he's made, incredible. You know, he's brought a lot of learning from his career, I suppose. And, he's played at one of the world's top clubs, and he's brought that professionalism, and he's just taken us just up that little notch further. That can only be good for Rangers. It's got to be. You know.
What are the changes, the kind of small changes that you've seen around as an employee?
I think, you know, Yeah, sure. I mean, like, you know, again, I'm not talking out of school, but, you know, the changes at the dressing room, for example, the changes at the academy, some of them are small. Some of them are small changes, you know, changing around things. I don't know if, you know, some of your listeners or viewers have seen the changes at Ibrox, for example. You know, having the players' kind of eating area and seating area, where previously the players had to go upstairs and eat usually in one of the suites upstairs and then come down, you know, when fans are arriving. And it just wasn't ideal, you know. Mm-hmm. So, and it's, you know, it's quite unusual in football, I guess. You know, most clubs, the teams go in, and that's them. They go in, the doors get closed, they eat there, they change there, they, you know. We were a wee bit different in that respect. So, you know, just having the players away from the noise, if you like, of match day, and just to concentrate. And the area that, you know, the club have created where the players can eat, next to that is a kind of breakout area where there's a big projector on the screen on the wall, something, so we can do some tactics. Just little things like that have raised the bar a little bit, you know. Mm-hmm. And same up in the academy, you know, you've seen some change in the dressing room area. There's a little kind of breakout area where the manager can home in on, you know, defenders, midfielders, attackers, and bring them in small groups and talk to them individually. Just small things that perhaps, you know, and it's no disrespect on anyone who was there before, but just probably didn't think about it and didn't realise that was something that we should and could be doing. But again, Stephen's brought that professionalism, you know, from Liverpool, from his experience elsewhere, and these little things work. You know, they just kind of raise. I mean, you know, you talk to any of the players, and they'll tell you the levels of professionalism are just far removed from where they were. And that's no slight on previous managers. You know, everyone's different. Mm-hmm. But the current management team, they've all come from, you know, if you look at their careers, you know, it's Liverpool, it's Man United, Chelsea, you know, it's big clubs. Mm-hmm. You know, you learn things, and you know, it's like working at a big company. You know, you do take that learning to your next company, etc. And that's kind of what Stephen and his team are doing, you know. So, I mean, even now, two and a bit years later, it's still incredibly exciting for certainly for staff to, mm-hmm. to be here, you know. So,
yeah. I think as a supporter as well, there's always been wee bits of Rangers that I feel have set us apart from other clubs. You know, just wee traditions that we keep going and things like, I mean, Stephen's mentioned it himself about the suit and stuff like that, and the manager's got to be in the suit and stuff. I like that personally as a fan because it sets us apart, you know.
I totally agree. You know, I mean, and you look around at other clubs and managers are in track suits, and I can sort of understand why a manager might want to be in a tracksuit, because he's quite active and animated, mm-hmm. on the touchline, and maybe running up and down celebrating goals and etc. And I can sort of understand that, and maybe they feel more comfortable in a tracksuit. But when Stephen said himself, when he came up and he put the suit on and he realised this is what Rangers managers wear, he mm-hmm. bought into it immediately because he saw the class. And you only have to walk up the marble stairs and go into the blue room and go into the other rooms up there when you realise, yeah, I'm at a proper football club. And I think Steve has used those words himself a number of times. You know, he's at a proper football club, and we wear shirts and ties. That's what we do. Go right back to the great Bill Struth. You know, that's what Rangers players do. And I'm, you know, kind of every time I put my suit on here and, you know, go to work and drive out the gate, and it's pride. You know, you've got a Rangers suit on.
Yeah.
It's a history that, you know, will always continue.
Bringing it up a wee bit, you're obviously Director of Operations at the Rangers Youth Development Company. You joined the club in 2001, and then it was called the Rangers Development Fund, if I'm right in saying that.
Yes, that's right, yeah, it was, yeah.
How hands-on were you at that time in 2001 in making decisions in regards to what that was, or if you could just give us a wee brief insight of what that was?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I had been working in London. I've been down there for 15 years. And lastly, what I'd been doing, I was with BT, actually down head office in London, St. Paul's. And I was kind of being used the last certainly 3 years of that as a bit of a troubleshooter, if you like. So I was, you know, moved into a team that wasn't working very well, and fix it, sort it, move on to the next team that wasn't really working very well, move it, fix it, sort it, move it. And that's kind of what I was doing latterly. My son, you know, he was five, and my wife and I, we'd been down for a few years, and we thought, look, I think it's time to come home, sort of thing. So I'd taken a year out, and I was doing an MBA at Strathclyde, and I got a phone call to, you know, would you like to come and work at Rangers, you know, and that's kind of quite a nice phone call to get, you know. So I was intended to take 2 years out, to be honest with you, but you know, when Rangers call, you know, it's a kind of no-brainer, really, you know. So you know, the brief was very simple. You know, at the time, the Rangers Development Fund were in Edmondson House. That's where my first office was. So you can imagine, I'd come from a company, British Telecom, where it's quite heavy on technology. I mean, even what we're doing now, we were doing that 25, 30 years ago in BT. We had a system that we were rolling out where it was for conference calls, where, you know, you saw each other who was on the call, a bit like Zoom. We had that 30 years. That's what I was used to doing, you know, and I had the best mobile phones, etc. And I came into a team of 12, that had been failing for a number of years, not through their own fault, to be honest. There was only one person who had a computer, and it was my PA. The other 11 had never even put a finger on a computer. They'd just never done it. There was only one computer. You know, they didn't know what Excel was or Word or none of that, you know. So everything was paper, you know. Each week, you know, we would have hundreds of agents and lotto guys coming in with paper forms and cash, and there was no direct debits, there was no website, there was no, you know, obviously no social media, etc. So the brief was quite simple, you know, bring it up to date, change it, turn it around and fix it, sort of thing, you know. So the main product was, I mean, Rangers Lotto is our cash cow. It was Rangers Pools back then. For me, that was a kind of flat cap image, you know. It was a kind of older style image. So I was quite keen on changing the whole thing, and so that's why I actually changed Rangers Development Fund to the Rangers Youth, and I wanted the word youth in there. Mm-hmm. To reflect on where, because I also changed where the money went, because previously the money, I mean, the background that you're looking at there, the three sides, Rangers Development Fund, they were founded in 1962 and raised something like £120 million in that time. And it basically paid for the majority of the three stands after the disaster. Willie Waddle was quite active. Willie used to stay behind after all the players went away, and he would sit in Edmondson House with Jim Hanna, who was a ticket centre manager at the time, and they'd chew the fat. Well, next to the ticket centre was Rangers Development Fund. So Willie was quite active with my predecessor, Hugh Adam. You know, that's where they kind of agreed, look, let's start putting funds towards a new stadium. And that's when it was agreed that's what they would do. So back then, the Rangers Development Fund were handing across, you know, £4, £5, £6 million checks. I'm talking, you know, a long time ago when that was a serious amount of money. But that had gone, you know, the National Lottery had come on board. Everybody thought they were going to win millions of pounds in the National Lottery. So people were leaving Rangers Pools en masse. And it was just a big downward slide. So I was basically brought in to change things around and turn it around. So, and I'd like to think, sitting here now, all those years later, yeah, I think we've done it. You know, we've got our own website. There's a lot of technology involved now. You can do everything online, on mobile, etc. Staff have all changed bar one. And we're away from Edmondson House, thankfully. You know, so it's all good. It's been a roller coaster, obviously lots of ups and downs, but where we are now is just a million miles away from where we were back then, you know?
Yeah. I was actually about to cover the RDF provided funds for the stands and how active you were in changing that. But you basically answered that, so I'm delighted at that.
That was me.
The funds also helped the land for the Hummel Training Centre. How proud were you when that opened?
The Rangers Training Centre, yes. I remember going up. It was just opened. There was a man called Peter Kingston who was very active and very, very involved in you know, the building of it. And Peter took me up and gave me a wee tour before it was officially opened. And it was state of the art. You know, Peter, he told me stories that he and the manager at the time, you know, Dick Advocat, they went on a tour, basically, Peter told me, of all the kind of big training centres around Europe. So they went to AC Milan, they went to Barcelona, they went to Madrid, they went to Man United, etc., etc. And what they basically did was nick bits from all of them. So they went to, and the one that impressed them most of all was, believe it or not, Middlesbrough. That's the one that Peter said that Dick Advocaat was most impressed with, because I think they had just opened one, and they themselves had nicked little bits and pieces off. So that at that time, the state-of-the-art one was actually Middlesbrough, I believe it or not. So anyway, so we took bits and pieces from all the big, and why not? It's a good way of doing things, to be honest. And so at the time when it opened, it had an incredible, and it still does, to be fair, it had a wow factor, you know, because previously, you know, it's well documented, Rangers players during Walter Smith's era, you know, would sit out the front in a minibus while Walter or Archie would be on the phone trying to find somewhere to train. How mad is that? That's crazy. You'd get the Gascoigne and Loudoup sitting in a minivan outside. You're, man.
Never affected them much, though, Col.
Well, correct, you know. Just think how good they could have been, though, you know. But so, and then when you go, you know, when you walk through, again, the changes up there have been tremendous. And all that, you know, really, some quite small but subtle. But you walk through those front doors and you've seen photographs of perhaps with the, you know, the white walls and some of the writing and the Rangers crest, and you're under no illusions. If you're a player that we are kind of courting, for example, and you walk up there, you can't fail to be impressed. You just can't, you know. And even, you know, you talk to some of the, even Jermaine Defoe, who's been around at Spurs and whatever, waxing lyrical about the facilities. I mean, that'll do for me, you know.
Yeah, so, exactly.
Ready is relentless. Ready is fearless. Ready is fearing no foe. Ready for the next level? Renew your season ticket now and support Rangers into season 2021. Prices are frozen for next season and the renewals deadline is extended. Visit rangers.co.uk/renew to secure your season ticket today. Always Rangers. Always loyal.
How proud are you then that are the graduates that have made the breakthrough so far from the youth academy into the first team? Your Alan McGregor's, Alan Hutton, obviously, before he was sold on, guys like that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we're obviously on the business side of things, you know. Craig Mulholland and his team are doing an incredible job. And even over the last 2 years, 3, 4, 5 years, the improvements that Craig has made have been astonishing. You know, I was telling the story fairly recently, you know. I stood watching a game up at the academy all years ago. John Brown's the manager, and I said to John, I said, right, who do you think is going to make it here in this team? And he pointed to, he says, that big boy at right back, he'll make it. It was Alan Hutton, and he said, right, that boy in midfield at left foot, and it was Charlie Adam. He said, and the wee boy up front, it was Ross McCormack. Now to have the three of them in the one team, and look at the transfer fees the three of them combined have commanded. Well, they came from the Rangers Academy, you know. So, and I always get a wee bit annoyed, and I deliberately stay off Twitter on these occasions when I hear people say the Academy has never produced anything. It has, you know, and it's naughty and lacking in detail and information of anyone to say it's never, never produced anyone. If you look around a lot of academies, top academies, you know, and I read a good piece the other day about Barcelona and how that's failing just now. You know, clubs go through different phases where players come through. And if you even look 5 years ago at, say, one of our development squads, and if you look at a development squad now, 5 years ago, you might have got maybe 3, 4, 5 players that you could choose and say, yeah, those guys are going to play professional football. The others, not so sure. If you look at our development squad now, I 90% of these guys will play professional football, which is an incredible achievement from Craig and the guys. You know, we could be playing a game in the development squad and they could make a couple of changes. Nothing dips. The form continues because the guys coming on are every bit as good as the guys who are on the pitch to start with. So the levels have been raised. The bar has been raised. And, you know, watching some of the kids there just now, like we've seen one or two, Nathan and Kai, for example, are probably the pick. Nathan Young Coombs is a great player coming through. Lewis Mayo, you know, Liam King. There's a lot of names there who will play professional football. Mm-hmm. You know, it's the Rangers. I mean, it's not for me to say, you know, as I say, I'm on the kind of the business side of things. But, you know, our pride is, and when we see, you know, maybe one of the young boys who's come out carrying the halftime drum at age 14, mm-hmm. suddenly making his debut. And we've had Nathan and Kai carrying that drum and Liam King carrying that drum out, you know. And they're playing for Rangers. That's a kind of sense of achievement for us. You know, that's what we take from it, you know. Yeah.
I just don't know how Andy can say that, because the guy we've got in goals just now, obviously, could have went for millions at one point, and you're hoping that guys like Robbie McCrory are going to be the future that's going to come through and take over for Alan McGregor.
Do you know there are? I mean, you know, sometimes I've seen this recently. It's a shame that, you know, some of the guys we've got just now, for example, in our development squad, if we go back 4 or 5 years when Ali took over and had 6 players, a lot of those guys would be straight in that first team. Mm-hmm. Without question, Robbie McCrory would be the goalkeeper. Without question, you know, Lewis Mayo, Nathan, Kai Kennedy, they would all be straight in that first team because they're good enough at that level. But, you know, the bar has been raised so high that the guys have been given an extra challenge, if you like. You know, Nathan has come on and I thought has done incredibly well in the games he's got. But he's got James Tavernier ahead of him.
Yeah.
You know, so that's Nathan's challenge, you know. Going back 4 or 5 years, he would be the first team pick. There's no question on that, you know. But the bar has been raised and the manager is continuing to raise that bar. And that's a challenge for the player. And they know that and they're up for it, you know. So, but yeah, we get a lot of pride when we see some of the kids that we've watched, as I say, kind of that half-time drum out, suddenly become, you know, Rangers players with tops, you know, and it's great to see, you know. That's our pride, I think, you know.
Given the fact that the manager's an academy graduate, do you think then that the players kind of see that road a wee bit clearer? The fact that he's been doing that route himself?
Yeah, I think so. Because I think, you know, I know for a fact the manager's very hands-on. You know, Craig's told me many times the manager is quite hands-on, and his top team management. They're always round talking to Craig. Craig's always round there. You know, it's well documented that a number of youth players go round and train with the first team each week. So it's well documented. The manager knows who the youth players are. He takes a great interest in them. As you say, he came through the Liverpool Academy. So, I mean, let's be honest. I think most fans of all clubs, would the ideal scenario in Nirvana, if you like, would be 11 homegrown players. You know, I think they would all love to see that. And I think the way things are just now, if we can achieve, I don't know, maybe one, maybe two graduates, if you like, coming through properly to be in the first team, not just in the kind of top 22 or something, but in that first team, that would be the kind of main achievement each year. And I think the manager's up for it. I think he would do it if they were there. I think Craig is definitely, and the players are up for it, because there's a few knocking on the door. There's no question they're knocking on the door, which is a great problem for any manager to have youth players coming through. You know, because as you say, the manager was a youth player. He was given his chance, his opportunity. And I think already he's given a number of players their opportunities, you know. Well, the chances are there if they, you know, the players, it's up to the players to take the chances, you know.
Can you just describe, Colin, a wee bit how the fans can get involved with the Rangers Youth Development Company to then put business into that for you to then transfer to Craig Mulholland to continue the academy?
Sure. Well, I've always said it, our cash cow, if you like, the main revenue earner for us and the club is Rangers Lotto. You know, it's £1 million a year game. If you go to our website, RYDC, Rangers Youth Development Company, rydc.co.uk, if you go in there, you see all of our products you can buy. You can say, I mean, what I'd like everybody to do is to sign up to direct debit. So £1 a week, you know, and you can win, you're entered into three competitions. You can win £25,000 monthly in a monthly draw. There's sort of £5,000 a Saturday draw, £1,000 in the Wednesday draw. We give away about £300,000 a year in prizes from Rangers Lotto. So, that would be first and foremost. I would ask all Rangers fans, if you could please go to rydc.co.uk and sign up to play Rangers Lotto. It's disappointing to say that, you know, the stand behind you there, the Sandy Jardine stand, everyone who plays Rangers Lotto will fit in that stand. You know, when you consider we have got something like, I don't know, 1.4 million fans around, you know, it's quite sad, you know, and I make no bones about this. You know, I'm not embarrassed to say it, but our rivals across the city dwarf us in terms of, you know, their equivalent game, and there's no reason why that should be, absolutely no, zero reason, you know. So rydc.co.uk, please sign up to play Rangers Lotto. The other ones, of course, Stadium Bricks, you know, you can go online right now. We're still doing Stadium Bricks. If you look over to the left there behind the, you know, the Broomlawn on the ground, the new style bricks, look fabulous. You know, you can go online just now and buy those. The other products you can't do just now, obviously, the halftime draw. Hopefully that'll be back. It's an interesting one. What, you know, I'm kind of looking ahead to think if we do have, and I have no information on this, if we do have games behind closed doors, for example, and that might happen, I don't know. We may have a virtual halftime draw game, you know, so if you're sitting at home watching Rangers TV, the game, we'll have a virtual halftime draw game where you can still buy a ticket, you know, so we'll introduce that if need be. Yeah, and also on our website, Rangers Scratch Cards are great presents. They're great gifts for birthdays and Christmas, etc., etc. So look, that Rangers Lotto first and foremost, then Stadium Bricks, etc. But that's how fans can do it. It's a great way of getting money into the club. You know?
Yeah, fantastic. To kind of touch on the poor side of our history in the last, well, recent history, I suppose. What was it like as an employee and a fan of the club in 2012 and the subsequent years that followed?
Big sharp intake of breath.
For us all.
Do you know, it's a funny one, Scott, because it started off, you know, certainly in the first couple of weeks, it started off quite well. In terms of, you know, Craig White came in and, of course, he had wealth off the radar.
Yep.
And, I remember sitting down with Craig, just one-on-one, the two of us, he invited me around for a chat. And, of course, I'm thinking, this is great. I'm going to meet a multi-billionaire. So I sat down, just the two of us, and we had a great chat, you know, and he told me some plans that he had. And I thought, wow, this is incredible, you know, and... I went away and I said to my team, you know, look, this is going to be amazing. This is, you know, no fears about the future, etc. So about a week later, you know, I went back and you know, I'm probably the only person he actually did any good for, to be honest, when I think about it. Because I sort of said to him that, you know, he said to me, what would you like to happen? I said, well, look, you know, the shop downstairs don't sell any of their scratch cards. He says, that's no use. He said, give me a second. And he picked his phone up and he phoned the head office. Was it JD back then, JD Sports? I can't, yeah. See, he phoned the head office down in Wigan and he said, I want you to place an order of 10,000 scratch cards from Colin Stewart. He'll be back in his office in an hour if you can phone him and sort it out. So true to his word, I went back, they phoned and bought 10,000 scratch cards off us and they were in the shop the following week. So I thought this is going to be wonderful, you know. So, but slowly but surely, you know, talking to Craig and just being in his presence, you know, I can only imagine, you know, when you're in, and I've been lucky enough, I guess, a few times in my life, you've been in the presence of someone who is genuinely wealthy. They have a bit of an aura about them, you know. They do. They just have an aura about them. Craig doesn't have an aura about him at all in any shape or form, you know, and just being there, I just thought it was a wee bit quirky because he just didn't come across as someone who, you know, so, you know, and it went south pretty quickly, to be honest with you. And after that, my radar was raised and I've said this before, there's nothing new here. I refused to meet Charles Green. I never met Charles Green. His secretary was, you know, sent me so many emails and phone calls. Charles wanted to meet me. I think Charles wanted to meet my bank balance is what he wanted. And I just refused to meet Charles and subsequent people. I didn't meet, you know, Wombias or Leach or any of those guys. I just refused to go around. And it was a difficult time for us, to be honest with you, because a lot of staff had been unfairly laid off. And I've got to be careful what I say here, I guess. But
yeah.
You know, we were still there and around in the broom loan. And I, to be honest, for a long time, we locked the doors, to be blunt. On occasion, I knew they were looking for me. So I would take my laptop and come home and work from home, which I can do, to be honest with you. It's no big deal here for me. I can do that. And I did that quite frequently because, you know, it got, and again, I'm not going to go into it too much, but it got a bit dark. To be honest with you, a wee bit threatening, I guess, you know, but it'll take more than that to kind of threaten me, you know. So I kind of shrugged that off, you know. When you stand in the Copeland as a 10-year-old, when bottles are flying over your head, you know, you kind of like, nothing, you know, it prepares you for everything for that, you know. So, it is what it is, you know, and thankfully that, you know, that period passed, you know, but it wasn't nice. It wasn't nice for anybody. It wasn't nice for staff, those staff. I mean, there aren't too many of us left, if you like, who were there beforehand, you know. A lot of really good people were let go through no fault of their own. It's a shame. It is what it is. But there's, you know, there's a few of us still left, you know. But it was a very dark time. But, you know, I never had any fear that the club would come through. I never had any fear, for example, for my area, RYDC. You know, I spoke to various authorities. I mean, I because of Rangers Lotto and the halftime draw, those are governed by the Gambling Commission of Great Britain. You know, that's my, if you like, my boss, if you like. So I spoke to the Gambling Commission, and they came to, the Inspector for Scotland came to see me in the office, and I met him off site a few times, and I explained to him. I said, look, you know, and it's a well known fact that all of the money raised from Lotto and the halftime draw and scratch cards, those are all lottery products. That money must go to the academy. It must go. It's ring fenced, and I've signed a contract, and I get a personal license every year from the Gambling Commission to run those products. That money must go to the academy. I cannot take a pound off you and then give it somewhere else because that's fraud. So I've signed a mandate to say that it must go to the academy. Now, I suspected strongly, and I think that's, you know, you know, saying it lightly, I guess, that the money was not going to the academy had I transferred it over. So I explained it all to the, you know, to the Inspector of Scotland, and he totally agreed with me, and he gave me a form, you know, basically saying, look, you know, we agree with what you're saying. You do not have to give cash to the club right now until we deem it safe enough. So that's why, you know, I was happy enough in that I'd spoken to the right authorities that I didn't really care what, you know, the guys who were running the club at the time said or thought or did even. They could throw their best at me. I knew that I was in the right. Mm-hmm. And I knew that, it was just the right thing to do, to be honest with you. And I knew that, you know, given you, if it was yourself or any other fan, it was the right thing to do. We would all have done the same thing. You know, it was money ring fence for the club, and it certainly was, that's where it was going, yeah, as far as I was concerned, you know. So
for our supporters, though, we looked at guys like yourself. Thankfully, guys like yourself were still at the club. Guys like Ali McCoist, Ian Durant, you know, to get us through this as a fan base. Who did you look to? Who was it that you kind of leaned on to get yourself through it? Because it must have been harder for yourselves at the time as well.
Do you know, yeah, absolutely, 100%. You know, I've known Ali for a few years and Ian, you know, and thank God they were there. Thank God Sandy was around, you know. But it was a kind of a lonely existence, to be honest, certainly for me. And RYDC, we had to shut ourselves off. Mm-hmm. As I say, I was at home quite often working to kind of keep out the clutches. And John Gregg, probably, you know, I've known John almost from the day I joined. You know, John has always had a passion for the youth programme. And it goes back, he's told me this, it goes back to when he was a manager. He always looked at the youth to see who he could put up. And probably John, I would say, you know, I don't know if we're touching on this, but I'm also a director of the Rangers Former Players Charity, and myself, John Gregg and Peter McCloy sit on that board and look after the former players, you know. So if anybody, I would say John, you know, who better to look up to than John Gregg, you know, no one better, to be honest, you know. Yeah. It was certainly quite lonely at the time, to be honest with you, because I weren't looking around, there weren't many of us left, to be honest, you know.
Yeah. What are your memories of the day then in March 2015 when Dave King, Paul Murray and John Gilligan took back control of Rangers, given the conversations that you've obviously alluded to before, and had it gone the other way, who knows what would have happened with yourself? Do you know what I mean?
That was an interesting day. You know, again, I'll be careful what I say, but my phone was red hot in the office. It was the day of the EGM, if you remember, the tents and the pitch, and, you know, and we were all kind of hoping that it would go the right way. And, you know, Dave and Paul and John were kind of in the wings. And, you know, and obviously, you know, I'd had some discussions beforehand, and I was really confident on how things were about to turn out, you know. But it was difficult, you know, because there was I'll be careful here, but you know, there was a very much a concerted effort, a kind of last minute effort, a drive, a push to get money off me that day. Wasn't nice, but you know, we did the right thing, you know, and the vote went the right way, and it was great. The feeling of relief. It was immense. The few of us who were left, you know, just afterwards, you know, there was a lot of hugs. You know, it was nice. good. It was nice. Great feeling.
Yeah.
4 years of hell, you know.
Definitely, definitely. Moving on for that slightly then. Obviously, shortly after the return of Dave King, Paul Murray and John Gilligan, we saw the return of the man you mentioned earlier, John Gregg. As a Rangers supporter, seeing pictures of John Gregg sitting in the director's box gives us just so much security to know that he is involved in it's a great start of Ranger at the end of the day. You know, you want guys like that involved at your club.
Yes. No, as I say, I've known John a few years, and he is Mr. Rangers. He lives and breathes. You know, he phoned me the other day there just for a catch up to see how we're both doing. So, I mean, he's fine. He's perfectly fine. You know, he came to see me maybe 3 years ago, and he just came into the office and sat down. We had a cup of tea, and we're sitting. After about half an hour, he said, "I guess you're wondering why I'm here," because he usually just phones. He doesn't tend to come in. So. I said, yeah, you know, and it was then he asked me if I would take over the running of the former players, you know, and I said, okay, I'll do that. I'll join the board and take over the running of it. You know, if you become a director of RYDC as well, so I'll do this if you do that sort of thing, you know. So he laughed and he says, look, I'll be delighted to do that. So having John Gregg on board as a director of the Rangers Youth Development Company. You know, it's tremendous. You know, it really is. He's, you know, just having him sit beside me sometimes is tremendous. You know, because I'm old enough to have watched him as a player, and then as a manager and director and all the other roles that John has had at the club. You know, so to sit on two boards with him, is tremendous. You know, he is Mr. Rangers. You know, a quick story on his statue actually just sprung to mind there. When John was first told, it was Campbell Ogilvie, he told John he was getting a statue. And John says, no, I don't want a statue. I don't want a statue. He's very, very humble, John. I don't think John appreciates sometimes the kind of feeling fans have with him, you know. He said, no, I don't want a statue. He said, no, you're getting a statue. Now, John, he was asked to go up to the sculptor's office up in Springburn, I think it was at the time. And so he says, after training, I went up one day, and he says, I genuinely thought I was getting like a foot statue that would sit on my desk beside all the other kind of awards. So he says, so I'm going up and looking at this and I can't find the door. And I said, and I looked along the window and I peered through the window and suddenly I looked up and saw this 9-foot statue of me. He says, and I couldn't believe it. And that's when John found out the statue he was getting was actually a 9-foot bronze statue, you know. So it tells a really funny, this lasts about half an hour, the story John tells, you know. So it's actually quite funny, you know, that he was so humble that he genuinely, A, didn't want one, and B, thought he was getting a little foot thing that would sit on his mantelpiece, you know. So, no, but having John Gregg back, because, you know, John knew, and I don't think I'm talking out of school again, John knew the effect it would have. When he stepped down, it took him a long time to decide it because he's Mr. Rangers, and he knows that John stepping down would let fans see, hold on, there's something wrong here. Yeah. You know, John knew the effect that would have. He also knew the effect it would have when he came back on board. So tremendous, great to have him on board. Great man.
During the kind of time that we're in just now, Colin, in the world, obviously, how difficult has it been for you and your department to kind of keep things rolling on? Obviously, there's some things you can't, as you alluded to earlier, with the half-time draws and stuff, but how difficult has it been overall to try and keep the band rolling a wee bit?
I mean, it's been almost impossible, to be honest. I mean, we've had to stop Rangers Lotto, for example, the weekly draws just now. A few reasons. One of the main ones, I guess, is that with GDPR rules these days, you cannot take customer records home. I can't take your name and address and card details here to my house. Can't do that. They have to stay at Ibrox. So for that reason alone, we can't run games. And, you know, so we took the decision to stop Rangers Lotto during lockdown. But once we're back at the stadium, we'll run additional draws to catch up again. So, but my staff are kind of just sitting home doing what they can do, you know. And we... One of my staff, she's able to do the inbox every day and answer fans and take brick orders and do little bits and pieces. I can still, you know, do what I do, no problem. But, you know, there's no question from our side, the work is less because there are no games, there's no football games, there's no half-time draws, there's no Rangers Lotto games. Because quite often I get a lot of feedback and a lot of questions from the previous week's draw, from the previous week's game, etc. Well, none of that is happening. So, yeah, I mean, I'm looking forward to lockdown being over and being back at the stadium and being back into to the swing of it again, you know. So, but to be fair, you know, we're doing the right thing just now, you know, because it's, yeah, you know, it's a difficult world out there just now, and I think we're all safer indoors right now, to be honest with you, you know. So, but to answer your question, yeah, it's been difficult for RYDC, to be honest with you, you know. So,
what's next for the Rangers Youth Development Company and the academy, and how do you see it growing in the future?
Yeah, well, you know, being back at the stadium and getting additional draws is something that I'm looking forward to, you know. You know, any time I'm up talking with Craig Mulholland up at the academy and I'm watching maybe training or a game, it just gives you that wee little spark to come back and think of something else to make more money, you know. Mm-hmm. And I'm working on something just now, which is an auction site, if you like, where I'm speaking to Craig about it recently, where I'd quite like, you know, say for example, Peter Lovenkranz or Kevin Thompson, whenever they're finished with a pair of boots, can they sign them and give them to me? And I'll put them online and raise money for RYDC. You know, that kind of thing. You know, the youth, can they sign it? If they just won a big game, can one of them take one of the tops? All of them sign it, put it online. So an RYDC auction site that we can raise more money for the academy. There's something I'm talking to. We had a conference call last week. I can't say too much right now, with a Swedish company, and it's quite successful over there. So I've got another conference call tomorrow, in fact, to catch up with that. So that, if that comes off, I think that could be fun, could be, you know, for fans, and it could be a decent revenue earner for us. So that's, you know, can I watch this space for that one? There's always something, you know, we're looking at to improve, and there's always better ways of doing things. It doesn't matter what you've done, there's always a better way of doing it, you know. So, but I'm always driven to raise, you know, I wanted, last season's check was £450,000 to the academy. I wanted this season's to be £500,000. It's going to be a bit difficult because we've had no games, for example, and we've lost the kind of five home games there.
Yeah.
Assuming the season, if it isn't played again, then that's five times half-time draws that I've lost the revenue for, etc. So it's actually going to be quite difficult. But you know, I'd love to kind of hand over £500,000 and then keep going to even £1 million. That's my kind of dream, you know. And I've been working on for a while, years, to have a competition where the prize is £1 million. You know, so a Rangers fan becomes a millionaire. That's the kind of dream I have up here. But it always stops me because it would need to something like, the tickets would need to be £25 or something. Yeah. I'm not sure enough fans would go for that, to be honest with you. So, but it's always something. There's always ideas there generating. And I always welcome, you know, emails from fans. You know, my email address is colinstewart@rangers.co.uk. It's no secret, you know. Fire me an email if anyone has an idea for something. Maybe they've seen it with a different club or etc. Send the ideas to me and we'll have a look at it. You know, so always looking for something new. You know, always on the lookout.
That was the next question actually. How can fans get in contact with you through social media, emails, etc.?
Yeah, well, just as I say there, I mean, first and foremost, rydc.co.uk. Then our lotto inbox, if you like, you know, is it rydc@rangers.co.uk, rydc@rangers.co.uk. So those are the two kind of official ones. You know, if it's something personal, an idea for me, they want me to do something, then just my name, @rangers.co.uk, Colin Stewart, RFC Colin. You know, get me on Twitter. You know, I'm quite active on Twitter. I like to respond to people, whether it's, you know, taking it offline and go DM, you know, whether it's something I can respond to. I mean, now and again, I cannot respond to, you know, for example, things going on just now at the club. I would never go anywhere near that. It's nothing to do with me. You know, I kind of keep away from that, you know, and I can't comment on things like that. And it's not for me to kind of talk about that. And even on things like, you know, people ask my opinions on a certain player, for example. Again, that's nothing to do with me. I can't comment on a certain player. And I never would, to be honest with you. You know, I've always been one of these fans. And there's a few of us, I guess, you know, I would never criticise a Rangers player. You know, I just can't do it. You know, I would. You know, you get disappointed maybe with somebody missing a chance or doing whatever, but I can't bring myself to criticise a Rangers player, someone wearing a Rangers. I just can't do it, you know. So,
well, part of the same team.
Yeah, well, actually, you know, plus at the end of the day, those guys are on that pitch doing something that you and I will never do, right. You know. So they've obviously reached a level that is way beyond you and I, you know, our capabilities. So, so to criticise somebody who is clearly better than you, why would you, you know? So, you know, there's a lot of things on Twitter that I kind of try and explain. Look, I like to engage on Twitter and talk, because I think it's fun as well. But at the same time, there's a few things I can't, you know. But yeah. by all means, you know, get in touch with me on Twitter and I don't really do Facebook, to be honest with you, but Twitter definitely, and emails. Email me, you know. I'm at home, I've got plenty of time in my hands, you know.
We all are. Colin, that's just about us. I'd like to thank you on behalf of the fan base, if I can, for everything that you've done for the club over the last 20 years nearly, and especially in the last kind of recent history since 2012. As a fan base, I think guys like yourself have really kept us together, so we're delighted to have guys like you at the club.
Thank you, Scott. It's very kind of you. I like to think that, I got lucky by getting a job, and I just see myself as a fan who got lucky, to be honest with you, and I'll do my best while I'm here. But I'm just doing what any of us would do to be, well, I'd like to think that anyway, you know. But there's more to come, you know, more to come, definitely. But listen, good luck with the pods. Thank you for inviting me on, and keep in touch.
Yeah. No bother. Thanks very much, Colin. Thanks very much for everything.
Thanks, everyone.
Cheers, stay safe. Cheers. Bye.
Cheers. Rangers, easy, okay. Look out, everyone, we're on our way.